Accession number 30407, Mr. Ralph Curtin, Reel 5. Now, we've looked up the ship, and it was the Highland Brigade. We're not sure of the date yet, but 1945. Did you get ashore or on the route? What do you remember about the actual trip out there?
We actually stopped off in Port Said. The officers went ashore, but we weren't allowed to go ashore, which didn't go down very well. But then they put into Ceylon, and we were allowed ashore there.
What do you remember of that?
Well, being able to go ashore after all that time on board ship, it was great because they marched us to in trucks, and then they took us on a route march, which finished up at a very big club, a big complex with a swimming pool, and we were allowed to spend 2 or 3 hours there. And then refreshments and march back, and then truck back to the boat and took off from there.
Did make a big impact. It was very foreign compared to what you were used to.
Oh, yes. I mean, the first time we'd seen tropical vegetation and all these natives running about, which was totally foreign to us. Yes, we enjoyed it.
Did you get ashore anywhere else?
No, we didn't. We didn't get ashore until we reached Bombay.
And what were your first impressions of Bombay?
The smell.
In what way? What was it like? I know it's difficult to describe, but
well. We came across on the approaches to Bombay in dhows, and they had a particular smell coming off them. And then as we got in closer and it got more crowded and more, the debris that was coming out from the shore was quite fantastic. And the smells when we actually came alongside was tremendous.
So what happened then?
Well, then we were eventually disembarked and entrained, which took best part of a day, and we arrived at a place called Poona.
And what was the train journey like?
Rickety. Hard bench seats, and it stank, and that was a pervading smell, which was India really. It was hot, very very hot, and eventually we arrived at this barracks at Poona. And we were all issued with creams, for anti-mozzie creams. We were told, we were given a lecture, we were given some food to start with, and then a very big lecture on what and what not to do.
Now, do you remember what the gist of it was?
To keep ourselves to ourselves, really. Not to eat things that hadn't been checked, not to take ice drinks, things along those lines. Generally, there was a major in the RAMC who gave us a lecture on hygiene, quite extensive in every detail, which I think every soldier that arrived in India got. And eventually we were allocated to barracks, issued with mozzie nets, and then we had lectures on malaria, on dysentery. It was a conditioning for the new arrivals from England on what to expect in India.
How did you acclimatise to the weather, the climate?
Well, firstly, for the first 5 or 6 months, it took time to acclimatise. The temperature we weren't used to, and the body just took a long time to acclimatise. It was sweating all the time. But eventually, of course, we did, and we got more suntanned. And we were taken to a period of time where we were allowed to take off our shirts and wear shorts and get ourselves conditioned. We weren't allowed in the heat of the day, certain times, only for an hour or something like that in the afternoon, and then early morning. And gradually, over the period of time, of course, we became acclimatised.
Now, were you doing any duties at Poona Camp?
Just sentry duties on gates and perimeter fences and stuff like that. But only general duties.
So, how long were you at Poona for then?
We weren't, I suppose, about 3 weeks, I think. 3 or 4 weeks.
Now, was the whole regiment there, or you just a draft?
Draft.
So, what happens next then?
Oh, then we were put on trains, and we joined the regiment, the 43rd Royal Tank Regiment, at Agra, where we were eventually broken down into troops and squadrons.
And which were you in? Do you remember?
I was in A squadron.
The other troop?
Number 2 troop.
And what was your reception like when you join a new unit?
Well, the usual procedures, reporting. Commanding officer's reception. He gave us a talk on the regiment, what to expect, what they had done, what was expected of us in the future, and our role in the actual setup of the chain of command.
Now, because we don't know when this was in 1945, was it after VE Day? Was it after VJ Day? When was this? Was the war still going on?
The war was still going on.
In Europe as well?
Yes. Oh, yes.
So what happened then? So you got your reception?
We went into reception, and then it was allocated, as I say, to troops, to a squadron, then to troops. And then we were allocated bashers. They're quite decent, actually.
Now, tell me what a basher is. Is it?
It's a long building with high walls, and inside they had steel cables running from one end to the other, and then suspended from the cables were two more cables hanging down, and on that was what looked to be a carpet. And these were set in regular patterns right the way down through the basher, through the big basher. And they had a pulley at either end. And we found out that the idea was that they had a native at each end. And on the end of these rugs, or whatever they were, raffia, they had lead weights. And the idea was that somebody would start pulling it at one end, and somebody at the other would counter-pull it, And the idea was, of course, to keep the air circulating. And there used to be two punker wallers, as they were called.
So these were punkers?
Punkers.
And the punker waller means man, yeah.
Was a man who pulled the rope from one end and at the other, and their job was to keep it going day and night. Whether they got relieved, I don't know. But often at night time, you'd wake up and find it it wasn't going, so you'd scream out, "Punker waller, Childy!" And that was, hurry up, and he would start getting cracking again. And obviously, sometime during the night, it would stop again, and somebody else would shout out.
Now, what else were the huts like? I mean, well, huts, bashes.
They had raffia windows, which you could open out with a pole to insert when you pushed the thing out and you supported the opening with a pole. And it was very, very hot. And then in the night, the temperature would drop dramatically. So you'd go to sleep with just your underwear on, the muzzin had tucked in all around you. Before you went to sleep, you sprayed inside with anti-mosquito deterrent, and consequently that smell always remembered as to do with India. You had to sleep, you had what they call a charpoy, and a charpoy was a wooden frame with raffia wound round and strengthened on rods. And the idea was that you put a mattress over the top of it, which was horsehair or something. And the other thing was, we were issued at those times with tins of cigarettes, which were 50 cigarettes at a time in a tin. And the idea was, you when you used all the cigarettes up, you kept the tins and you put them under the four corners of the actual charpoy, and you put a spirit in there to stop the ants, because if they climbed up your charpoy when we first went there, we used to get bitten all over.
Was there a general problem with bugs or ants, or was it ants?
Oh, tremendous, tremendous. Scorpions. One rule was, in the morning, pick up your footwear and turn them over and bash them on the ground several times. Never put your hand in, otherwise you get, if there's a scorpion in there, you get a bad bite. And that certainly upset you. Snakes were prevalent.
I believe they were gathered around your water barrel or something. Do you want to tell that story?
Oh, yes. One evening, my friends Steve and I went down to the local, what do you call it, village. And we came back in the evening, and I was quite thirsty. And I shouted to Stevens, and throwing him my mug, and he caught it. And I said, "Would you like to get me a drink, please, Steve?" And he said, "Okay." And he went, and in those days, and in the Basher, we used to have a great big earthenware jug, big one, filled with water. And it was always chlorinated water. And over the top of it, they used to have a gauze, and on the edges of the gauze were some weights to keep it in place. And the idea was, you lift it up, just dip it in and get a drink. Steve went and got there, and as I went down to talk to him and pick up my cup, my mug, I saw a movement on the bottom of the jetty, as it were, and it was a snake. It was a bad one too.
What type? Well, how big?
I think it a big one. Five, six feet in length, and it turned out to be a mamba, which was one of the worst ones you could get, as I understand. So I said to Steve, don't move, for God's sake, don't move. There's a snake in front of you, down at your feet. So he looked at me and put his hands up and went, what are you going to do, like? And I said, well, hang on. So I found a bamboo pole and I lashed a bayonet to it. And I said to him, on the count of three, I'm gonna slash at this thing. And I said, it's up to you to move as quick as you can. So on the count of three, I slashed, he jumped, then all hell broke loose. Because in the course of jumping, Steve jumped right through a muzzy netting onto a chap on his charpoy. And that made all the charpoy wires sag, which obviously pulled all the nets up when it righted itself. And confusion reigned. Actually, the snake got away. I think I cut it, but it got away. But that was typical of India.
Now, what about the anti-mosquito precautions? So you had the mozzie nets.
We had the mozzie nets, yes. They were very, very good. You had to be particularly careful that there was no cuts or holes in them, because mozzies would find their way through anywhere if there was any separation anywhere. And of course, you had the anti-malaria tablets.
The quinine or
quinine?
Is it quinine or quinacrine?
Well, both really, I think.
What about any other precautions against mosquitoes or malaria?
Well, you used to have cream, which you had to put over your face and, you know, around here. And any exposed parts of an evening, if you went out at all, you had to have, like, you tuck your trousers in, and obviously cover up as much as you could. Precautions you had to take all the time. I actually came down there was a lot of dysentery about.
Now, was that early on or later on?
Later on.
We'll hold
we'll come to that, yeah.
Now, so when you were settling in, what about the food you got in India? Was it normal British Army food? Or
it was, actually. Yes, one had to be very, very careful of fruit.
Why?
Well, you never ate an apple as such without skinning it. You had to be particularly careful with bananas or fruit of any kind, especially where in the bazaar or something like that. If it came through the regiment, then you could more or less say it was pretty secure. It was pretty good. Yes, the food, obviously, there was a lot of rice. I always remember a lot of rice. And meat you had once a week. Lots of potato type of food. Yes, food wasn't bad, actually. Food wasn't bad.
No. What were your duties with them? I mean, were you put in a tank, or did you form a crew with someone? You know?
Well, I formed a crew. I formed part of a crew, and
do you remember who your sergeant or the crew, the tank commander was?
I'll just find it for you.
So, who was your sergeant?
Here we are. He was a Lieutenant Leister.
And he was your tank commander?
He was my tank commander.
And it's L-Y-S-T-E-R?
L-Y-S-L-E-R, yeah.
L-Y-S-T-E-O,
is it?
And he was the right. So who else was in the crew? Do you remember?
I can't remember the names now, but.
And what type of tank was it?
It was a Sherman.
Now, had you worked with Shermans before?
No, I hadn't. Now, this is coming to an interesting part of why we were out there, because I don't know if you've heard of a tank called CDL, Canal Defence Light.
What about it?
Well, this was, if you can imagine an arc welder, yes? And if you arc it, a blue flame comes out, a blue flash. And if you're looking at it, you can't see out for a few seconds. Well, what was the regiment formed around these CDL tanks, and the CDL tanks were Grant tanks, American Grants. And inside they had a donkey engine to run a generator. And the turret, which had looked like a gun turret, a gun for the turret, an actual gun, was false. And what it was, the turret itself, inside there was a section, half of the turret was a section on the right, and inside that section on the right there was an arc machine. And we as a crew had to wear a special tank suit with asbestos covering and glove. And what it was you had a slide which you opened up and the machine was in there. And then in the front of the actual turret, there was a slot. And inside were two mirrors, parabolical elliptical mirrors. And what happened is you arced the light, got it going, burning the rods. You then opened the slit. Now, if you remember yourself, any light that goes out turns over. And the idea was you've fired this up, got it going, powered it up. You had a rheostat which operated on this front grid where the light went out of. It was, they had a slide mechanism where, and it, you could rotate it forward and back across your vision like that. So that if you were actually looking at the light from the outside, you'd see this powerful light suddenly hit you, and then suddenly it would start going on and off, on and off, on and off. And the idea was that anybody looking into this light couldn't actually see what they were aiming at. And the idea was that you formed these tanks into apexes, so that you, in the apex, you would get a light either side of the apex, right across the front of it, but there was a dark period in between the two. And they put the Shermans in the dark patches, so you could see what you were firing at, but the enemy couldn't see you. And the thing was, you could get them alternating in a line. The sequence would be that you would get several doing a different sequence at different times, so that over a long period, a long front, you couldn't see what was going on, but we could.
Now, which were you in, a CDL or a Sherman?
Well, I started in CDLs and I finished up in a Sherman.
Right. So which was Leister in? Lieutenant Leister, what was he in?
He was in the Sherman.
So, right, yeah. So that Now, so we'll leave that because that's later on then. So you joined a CDL. You don't know who was running your CDL. So who's
the 43rd Royal Tank.
No. Oh. I mean, who was just you normally have an NCO or a tank commander.
Oh.
Don't know. So how many crew would a CDL
five.
Have?
Oh, a CDL. Let me say now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 4.
So what were the crew roles?
The crew role, well, was one chap obviously working the light. You had a commander. You had a driver. And one other.
Now, and you were, which one did you take?
Well, I initially went on the CDL.
As a driver?
As, yeah.
So you had no gun, so.
Well, there was. It was a 75.
Oh, it had a 75 as well as?
Oh, side sponson, a very side one, you know, the old fashioned.
So what did you do? Which
I was driver.
You were just driving?
Driving.
Now, so were you training in these specs? Why were they called Canal Defence Light, these grants? You don't know.
I really don't know. It was Canal, and I understand it was used on a certain crossing of the Rhine, which I found out afterwards. And on that crossing, they had the least casualties. We know that for sure. We were told that.
Now, how did you train with them? What training were you doing with them?
Oh, well, we went out on. We were trained to start off as a troop, and then we. Trained off as a regiment finally in firing exercises, and we were backing up. The intention was if the Japanese broke through, that we would be out on the infill plains and back up whatever was required.
So now, so you were working, how long were you on the CDL for before you transferred to a Sherman?
Oh,
quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else about the CDL? I've not heard of them. They're very
interesting. I know.
Very unusual.
It's a very unusual one. Actually, to be honest, when we left India, all our equipment was handed over to the Indian Army. They came in and took everything over.
But that's
very well, yeah.
So what happens next then? You're training, based at Agra.
Mm. We used to go on manoeuvres up and down the country. And eventually, we did a lot of work locally. And I eventually was asked to become a Queen's Messenger.
Hang on, is that before or after you were on the Sherman?
After the Sherman.
Right, let's do the Sherman first.
Okay.
I'm a bit confused still about our years because, I mean, if it's 1945, you should be noticing the end of the war.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Not long after you
not
got there.
Not long after, yeah.
Which. I was wondering why you were preparing for them to break through.
Well, we were there in the first place as a backup.
Right. Okay.
The reasons for us going out there was obviously to do something along those lines.
What about when you transferred to a Sherman? What did you think of the Sherman?
It was very good. I enjoyed driving them. Quite good, very responsive, and fairly easy to maintain. Although the one problem we had with the Sherman was dust, because if you drove in convoy and you weren't the leading Sherman, you sort of disappeared. And when you when you eventually got out, you were covered in this dust, and all the dust was sucked in through the open cupola and went through to the engine, obviously, and all the filters got blocked. So maintenance was a tremendous thing.